from deep inside your radio.
Oh, strap in. It's going to be a fast and exciting ride today, ladies and gentlemen. But first of all, just to point out, I think it was either Thursday or Friday, President Bush announced that the prisoner abuse scandal in Iraq has placed a stain upon the honor of the United States. 4 years ago, we were all upset about a stain on a blue dress. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's a free country. You pick your president, you pick your stain. Hello, welcome to the show.
Mother of mine.
Any man who loves his mother is man enough for me. Brightening her hours, sending her flowers, though it's no anniversary. Many men want fame and fortune, it's gold they love to see. But I'd say a man who loves his mother is man enough for me.
Mother of mine.
Many men love dogs and kittens and pet them constantly. But show me a man who loves his mother.
His mother.
As much as she wants to be. And I'll show you a man who is man enough for me.
Mother of mine.
Oh,
from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, really close to Ghostland. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to another edition of Le Show. Still going. There must be a bunny inside. I don't know. I know there isn't a pony. Ladies and gentlemen, we are so on top of it. We, you and me, the United States of, where is it? America. We are so on top of it. Listen to this from the Associated Press. After a rash of security lapses, the Energy Department is considering creating an elite force of federal guards to protect plutonium and weapons-usable uranium from terrorists. They're thinking about it. That's good thinking. Can I get minutes of those meetings? Because those would be good. I want to hear the nays.
I don't think we need an elite force because plutonium is only the most dangerous substance known to man.
Good point. The Energy Department is also preparing to move some of the material to more secure areas. Hey, that's a good idea, too. Why didn't I... it's not my job. Why didn't they... Oh, it is their job. Energy Secretary Spencer Abraham, Friday. This past Friday, ladies and gentlemen. We are so on top of this. He outlined proposals to increase security at nearly a dozen government facilities that hold highly radioactive material that could be used to fashion a crude nuclear device. You know, the culture has gone so far downhill. Why can't we have refined nuclear devices? You see? See what I'm saying? Says Abraham, these materials, quote, must not be allowed to fall into the wrong hands. He said that in a speech to security guards participating in a skills competition. He cited poor performance in mock security exercises at some weapon sites and lapses such as lost keys to secure areas and shortcomings in training to back up his call for new security measures. Although rare, he said, such lapses are unacceptable. A department audit recently found guards at one facility cheating in mock tests by obtaining advance information about an assault during a test. Well, that's the same thing they do with the test of the missile defense system. Why isn't that good enough? Another investigation found guards inadequately trained in such basic tasks as using a shotgun. Apparently they did know how to use the toilet. For the first time, the Energy Department is closely considering creating a federal police force to guard nuclear weapons facilities and establishing a specially trained force to protect areas with the most sensitive material. Abraham said that we're thinking about it, ladies and gentlemen. It's what year is this? How far after the September 11th, 2001 are we? Abraham said the department is also moving toward the consolidation of nuclear material in fewer places because some facilities holding weapons-usable material may never be able to meet the most stringent security requirements. Well, never too late. Oh, yeah. No, it is possible to be too late. I don't know if we are, but it's a good try. We are so on top of it. I am so proud. But we'll never know, ladies and gentlemen. Concern over the integrity of the national security secrecy system might be well observed. A new oversight report has revealed a surge in secrecy. So, if stuff is going wrong, don't worry about it. The U.S. government classified 14 million new national security secrets last year, up from 11 million the previous year and 8 million the year before. It's just, we're better. We know more secrets. Oh, there's so much more. You know that. But first I have to deal with this because this is my town. And this is based on reporting from the Orlando Sentinel, a newspaper that does something unusual these days. They actually went and checked behind a press release so that if somebody said somebody was on strike, they might actually have made a phone call to find out if those people were on strike. But no, this is about something else. Michael Moore says Disney will not distribute Michael Moore's new film, which slams President Bush, because Michael Eisner fears President Bush's brother Jeb will retaliate by wiping away some of Disney's tax breaks in Florida. This was in the New York Times, the paper quoting Moore's agent, Ari Emanuel. Well, you got to trust him, don't you? quote, he, Eisner, definitely indicated there were tax incentives he was getting for the Disney Corporation, and that's why he didn't want me, Ari Emanuel, Michael Moore's agent, to sell the movie to Miramax. That's what he said to the New York Times. On his website, Moore quotes the Times as the source of the tax angle. The Times also didn't seem to check whether Disney does get any tax incentives from Florida. You would think, says the Orlando Sentinel, there would have been some skepticism given that Ari Emanuel is a well-known Hollywood liberal who was involved in the Howard Dean campaign. But still, you got to trust an agent, don't you? The Times again referred to the possibility of the tax breaks in the Thursday editorial headlined Disney's Craven Behavior. Says the Orlando Sun Sentinel, if the Disney parks did get any tax breaks, they certainly didn't depend on Jeb Bush's goodwill. He couldn't tax himself without the Florida legislature, and lately, given their relations, he would have had better luck getting four mules to sing in a barbershop quartet. Disney, according to the Orlando Sentinel, pays the same state taxes as any other corporation doing business in Florida. Disney's one big advantage is that it enjoys governmental powers on its property through a special district which has been in place since 1967. Lawmakers have ordered an audit of the district. Jeb Bush says he's an unwilling participant in the rollout of Michael Moore's new film. Just, you know, because you can always trust an agent. Can't you? You can always trust an agent, and you know that the nuclear materials are in safe hands. But now, ladies and gentlemen, let's get down to it and start with the bubble is almost burst. The need for news beyond the bubble is almost being obviated. The herd has smelled blood, and pretty soon the need will be for countervailing information because the American media now... Nobody wants to be the last to say this is a failure. You know that. So that's where this is going. And by the way, while I'm on the predictive mode for a moment, ladies and gentlemen, because nobody listens to this show, so it's safe. Nobody's going to come after me to say, hey, you were wrong. The big debate in the next 4 years will be who lost Iraq. And just place your bets on who's going to be quicker to that, whether it will be the Democrats accusing the Bush administration of faulty strategy and mismanagement, or whether it will be the Republicans blaming the critics of the war for losing Iraq. Just mark it down and then forget you ever heard it. Dateline Edina, Minnesota. Alliant Tech Systems, the U.S. Army's only supplier of bullets. How about that for single sourcing, ladies and gentlemen? The U.S. Army has one supplier of bullets, and it says it can't keep up with demand that is rising to its highest level since the Vietnam War. Oh, we're not comparing this to the Vietnam War, are we? No. The Army is looking for a second ammunition source. U.S. Army spokesman Major Gary Tallman, who replaced Major Shortman in the same job, he didn't immediately return calls seeking comment. He was out looking for bullets. Hey, get down to South Central. I bet there's some spent ones in the... Well, actually, I bet there's some unspent ones just lying around. From a leading conservative, to put it mildly, newspaper, The Washington Times, owned by Reverend Moon, Israel's leading newspaper, Haaretz, has delivered the knockout punch to the Bush administration's image problem when one columnist wrote, the U.S. was now guilty of war crimes. During the first 2 weeks of April, now this is not a columnist, this is a reporter. The Haaretz story says, the American army committed war crimes in Fallujah on a scale unprecedented for this war. The sight of decapitated children, the rows of dead women, and the shocking pictures of the soccer stadium that was turned into a temporary grave for hundreds, all were broadcast to the world only by the Al Jazeera network. During the operation in Fallujah, according to the organization Doctors Without Borders, U.S. Marines even occupied the hospitals and prevented hundreds of the wounded from receiving medical treatment. Snipers fired from rooftops at anyone who tried to approach the hospital. The article in Israel's equivalent of the New York Times said, the only conclusion that has been drawn thus far from the indiscriminate killing in Fallujah is the expulsion of Al Jazeera from the city. That's from an Israeli newspaper as passed on by the conservative, ultra-conservative, Washington Times. But we're way beyond Fallujah. And yet, an Iraqi exile group may have violated restrictions against using taxpayer funds to lobby when it campaigned for U.S. action to oust Saddam Hussein, according to U.S. officials with direct knowledge of the matter. Bet you haven't heard this. See, the bubble I was saying about the bubble. The bubble is almost burst, but there's still stories that don't quite. If the charge, which is the subject of an upcoming probe by the General Accounting Office, is borne out, it means U.S. taxpayers paid to have themselves convinced that it was necessary to invade Iraq. This would be the Iraqi National Congress. Ahmed Chalabi, chairman. You can send your thank you cards directly to him, ladies and gentlemen. He's on the Iraqi Governing Council. You should be able to find him. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has announced an independent review board will examine the Pentagon's response to the Iraqi prisoner abuse. That's the third commission looking into stuff either 9/11 or Iraq-related, and it means that the Pentagon has appointed a commission to investigate the Pentagon's investigation. The Red Cross knew. The International Red Cross discovered serious violations of the rights of Iraqi prisoners with abuse so widespread it may be considered to have been tolerated by the U.S.-led coalition. This is according to the Wall Street Journal. In a confidential 24-page document, the International Committee of the Red Cross said treatment in some cases was tantamount to torture. The ICRC will release the full text, which it doesn't usually do. The use of ill treatment went beyond exceptional cases and might be considered a practice tolerated by coalition forces, says the ICRC. Says the liberal London newspaper The Guardian, many of the prisoners abused at Abu Ghraib. Anybody want to join the contest for the most ways to pronounce that prison? It's like New Orleans. Everybody who pronounces it differently. Many of the prisoners at that prison were innocent Iraqis, picked up at random by U.S. troops and incarcerated by underqualified intelligence officers. This is according to a former U.S. interrogator from the jail, Torrin Nelson. He served as a military intelligence officer at Guantanamo before moving to Abu Ghraib as a private contractor last year, blamed the abuses on a failure of command in U.S. military intelligence and an over-reliance on private firms. He alleged those companies were so anxious to meet the demand for their services, they sent cooks and truck drivers to work as interrogators. Hey, I've been interrogated by a cook. Asked me if I liked the meal. He claimed many of the detainees are innocent of any acts against the coalition. There's a detainee whom I, this is Nelson speaking, recommended for release, and months later was still sitting in the same tent with no change in his status. He says the same systemic problems were also responsible for a large number of Afghans being mistakenly swept into Guantanamo Bay. He says a third or more of the inmates at the controversial prison camp in Cuba had no connection to terrorism. There's a guy who was involved in the interrogations. He come forward to speak now because he believed military intelligence was seeking to blame Abu Ghraib on a handful of soldiers to divert attention away from ingrained problems in the military detention and interrogation system. It's called accountability. It applies only to third-grade teachers. Apropos, despite President Bush's promise that the wrongdoers in Abu Ghraib and similar situations, if there are any, will be brought to justice, two of the central figures named in a U.S. Army report 2 years ago as responsible for the abuses are still on the job. This according to an Australian newspaper. They're the head of the Army's military intelligence unit in Baghdad, Colonel Thomas Pappas, and a private defense contractor who worked as an interrogator with that unit, Stephen Stefanowitz, says one of the lawyers defending a junior officer charged in the scandal. I can't believe that. The Pentagon confirmed this week Colonel Pappas was still commanding his unit, even though he's been reprimanded over the incident, and there are reports he may soon be criminally charged. Stefanowicz's employer, a military contractor to the Pentagon, said he, too, had not been removed from his job. Here's an interesting fact. military intelligence officer would enter the cell blocks in sterile uniforms, showing no names or ranks, making it difficult to track their activities. That's neat. That's a neat idea. The Pentagon has not even asked the company, the private contracting company, CACI, for Stefanowicz's resignation. We've not received any information to stop any of our work, to terminate or suspend any of our employees, says the company's chief executive, Jack London. Just flew in from his own square. The secret army report on the scandal by General Taguba had called for Seth Stefanowicz to be fired on March 8th. Think General Taguba is going to get that promotion? Soldiers in the Queen's Lancashire Regiment, some of whose troops have been accused of torturing Iraqi prisoners of war, have been ordered by senior officers to hand over every single photograph they took while in Iraq. Officers are seeking to prevent potentially damaging images falling into the hands of the media. Yeah, that'll fix everything. An Iraqi prisoner has described how he was allegedly subjected to vicious beatings by laughing British soldiers. Well, see, Maybe smiling. Maybe grimly smiling. Brits laughing? You kidding me? He says he was. These were during interrogation sessions which left another man dead. In a witness statement obtained by the liberal British newspaper The Independent, Kifat Talla claims he was hooded and beaten around the neck, chest, and genitals by soldiers during 3 days before being made to dance in front of his tormentors. Soldier C, an army reservist attached to a regiment in southern Iraq last year, is having his charges investigated by the British Ministry of Defense that he'd seen soldiers torturing four Iraqi men. More about those contractors, private contractors. The military's reliance on civilians over there is so great, many people are being sent abroad without complete background investigations. So it's not even cooks and truck drivers, it's maybe terrorist cooks and... Oh, please. Oh, please. Where would they learn stuff like this? Physical and sexual abuse of prisoners similar to what's been uncovered in Iraq takes place in American prisons with little public knowledge or concern. This is in the New York Times, according to corrections officials, inmates, and human rights advocates. In Pennsylvania, inmates are routinely stripped in front of other inmates before being moved to a new prison or a new unit. In Arizona, male inmates at Joe Arpaio's Maricopa County Jail in Phoenix are made to wear women's pink underwear as a form of humiliation. Some of the worst abuses have occurred in Texas. Interesting. Whereas prisons were under a federal consent decree during much of the time President Bush was governor because of crowding and violence by guards against inmates. Judge William Wayne Justice imposed the decree after finding that guards in Texas prisons were allowing inmate gang leaders to buy and sell other inmates as slaves for sex. The man who directed the reopening of Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq last year and trained the guards there, who would that be? Lane McCotter? His background? No, not a truck driver, not a cook. He resigned under pressure as director of the Utah Department of Corrections in 1997 after an inmate died there while shackled to a restraining chair for 16 hours. The inmate, who was kept naked the whole time, suffered from schizophrenia. I think it's been proven that clothing causes schizophrenia, so I think Lane McCotter was right on the money. Lane McCotter later became an executive of a private prison company, one of whose jails was under investigation by the Justice Department when he was sent to Iraq as part of a team of prison officials handpicked by John Ashcroft to rebuild Iraq's criminal justice system. In response to a request for an interview on Friday, McCotter said in a written statement he'd left Iraq last September, just after the ribbon-cutting ceremony, to reopen Saddam Hussein's notorious Abu Ghraib prison. Can we get footage of that? That must have been some joyous... How many bottles of Freyschnett champagne were broken on that prow? There are new photos and new videos coming. A photo apparently showing U.S. soldiers beating an Iraqi prisoner nearly to death and having sex with a female POW. Other images show soldiers acting inappropriately with a dead body. A videotape apparently made by U.S. personnel is said to show Iraqi guards raping young boys. Oh, there's so much more, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sifting. This is me sifting. A British television station reported that a young Iraqi girl held at Abu Ghraib was stripped naked and beaten while her brother heard her scream from another cell. The ITV News report quoted Suhaib Al-Baz, a cameraman for Al Jazeera, saying he saw the abuse while he was being held at the prison. Al-Baz said he'd been stripped, beaten, spat upon, and deprived of sleep. Hey, sleep. Soldiers told soldiers took torture shots with their personal cameras, he said. In one case, Al-Baz said he saw a soldier's computer screen emblazoned with a backdrop picture of a hooded, handcuffed prisoner being attacked by a dog. The question is, was it individuals or was it policy? We have two conflicting reports, ladies and gentlemen. From The Guardian in Britain, the sexual humiliation of Iraqi prisoners at Abu Ghraib was not an invention of maverick guards, but part of a system of ill-treatment and degradation used by special forces soldiers that is now being disseminated among ordinary troops and contractors who do not know what they're doing. This is according to British military sources. The techniques devised in the system, called R2I, resistance to interrogation, match what's going on in Abu Ghraib. One former British Special Forces officer who returned last week from Iraq said it was clear from discussions with U.S. private contractors in Iraq that the prison guards were using R2I techniques, but they didn't know what they were doing. He said British and U.S. military intelligence soldiers were trained in these techniques. There's a reservoir of knowledge about these techniques, which is retained by former Special Forces soldiers who now are being rehired as private contractors. Contractors are bringing in their old friends, using sexual jibes and degradation along with stripping naked, is one of the methods taught on both sides of the Atlantic under the slogan, "Prolong the shock of torture," he said. The whole experience is horrible, says this British military source. Two of my colleagues couldn't cope with the training at the time. One walked out saying, "I've had enough," and another had a breakdown. This is during mock training for what was going on. It's exceedingly disturbing. This is a special boat squadron officer asking that his identity be withheld. Many British, U.S., and Special Forces soldiers learn about the techniques because they're subjected to them to help them resist if captured. And a number of commercial firms which have been supplying interrogators to the Army boast of hiring former Special Forces soldiers. The crucial difference from Iraq is that frontline soldiers who are made to experience these techniques themselves develop empathy. They realize the suffering they're causing. But people who haven't undergone this don't realize what they're doing to people, said the British former officer. He says the dissemination of these techniques is all the more dangerous because of the general mood among American troops. Quote, "The feeling among U.S. soldiers I've spoken to in the last week is that the gloves are off. Many of them still think they're dealing with people responsible for 9/11. When these interrogation techniques are used on British soldiers for training purposes, they're subject to a strict 48-hour time limit, and a psychologist is always present. Like on the Donahue show. On the other hand, according to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, the company at the center of the military investigation into mistreatment of prisoners in Iraq received no specific training in running a facility for prisoners of war, Army officials said. They did get some instruction in handling individual prisoners, and they were schooled in the particulars of the Geneva Conventions and other rules governing the treatment of enemy prisoners of war, said the officials. This is although family members of those same people said they did not get exposed to the Geneva Convention until after they were charged with violating it. On to the larger picture. After the September 11th attacks on America, it became apparent to senior U.S. policymakers that Saddam Hussein and his regime had to go, said the Defense Department's top policy official this week. Officials believed efforts to contain him had largely failed, says Douglas Feith, Undersecretary of Defense for Policy. That's right, it's a Feith-based policy. President Bush concluded, Feith said to the American Enterprise Institute, a think tank, in light of the 9/11 attacks, it was necessary to remove Hussein. The danger was too great that Saddam might give the fruits of his weapons of mass destruction programs to terrorists for use against the United States. And that threat did not hinge on whether Saddam was actually stockpiling chemical or biological weapons. And he adds, no one can properly assert that the failure so far to find WMD stockpiles undermines the reasons for the war. You got me there, babe. You got me there. I think, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
It was an escalating mountain of apologies this week. Condoleezza Rice said, we are deeply sorry for what has happened to these people in Abu Ghraib. The new general brought in to run U.S. military jails in Iraq, coming over from Guantanamo, said, I would like to apologize for our nation and for our military for the small number of leaders and soldiers that have committed unauthorized and possibly illegal acts on the detained here in Abu Ghraib. That's Major General Jeffrey Miller. I would like to personally apologize to the people of Iraq for the actions of a small number of leaders and soldiers who have violated our policies. Is it a few bad apples or is it a few bad orchards? And then it went up the line. President Bush on Wednesday, side by side with the King of Jordan.
I told His Majesty as plainly as I could that the wrongdoers will be brought to justice and that the actions of those folks in Iraq do not represent the values of the United States of America. I told him I was sorry for the humiliation suffered by the Iraqi prisoners and the humiliation suffered by their families. I told him I was equally sorry that that people have been seeing those pictures, didn't understand the true nature and heart of America. I assured him that Americans like me didn't appreciate what we saw. And it made us sick to our stomachs. I also made it clear to His Majesty that the troops we have in Iraq, who are there for security and peace and freedom, are the finest of the fine.
The next day he apologized in an interview to the Egyptians. President Bush has yet to apologize to the Iraqis. Then, on Friday...
Now, Mr. Secretary, I'd like to know...
We'll get to that in a moment. On Friday, Defense Secretary Rumsfeld added his apology.
So to those Iraqis who were mistreated by members of the U.S. Armed Forces, I offer my deepest apology. It was inconsistent with the values of our nation. It was inconsistent with the teachings of the military to the men and women of the armed forces. And it was certainly fundamentally un-American.
I guess it's not us that did that. Former Cosmopolitan magazine editor Helen Gurley Brown got herself in trouble at a Women Who Care lunch sponsored by United Cerebral Palsy of New York City when she introduced honoree Susan Caskill. Addressing a crowd at Tavern on the Green that included some severely disabled people, Brown became highly annoyed at the sound of keening moans. Who's making that noise? Brown demanded, interrupting her remarks. Can someone please make that child be quiet? It was too late by the time a mortified Brown learned it was a middle-aged person with cerebral palsy. What can I say? I thought it was a child cutting up, Brown said. I now realize how wrong I was, and I want everyone to know how profoundly sorry I am. Brigitte Bardot, the former French film goddess turned animal rights activist, broke down in tears this week when she left a Paris courtroom after testifying at her latest trial on charges of inciting racial hatred. Previously convicted of similar offenses, the 69-year-old Bardot is on trial over her book, which is an outspoken attack on gays, immigrants, and the jobless. She defended herself in court against charges that she incited racial hatred in the best-selling book. Quote, I never knowingly wanted to hurt anybody. It's not in my character. If I did hurt someone, I'm sorry, she said. Japanese carrier All Nippon Airways has apologized following the revelation the captain of one of its jets dozed off at the controls during a domestic flight in March. The 50-year-old Japanese captain whose name has been withheld fell asleep while piloting the jumbo jet on March 23rd. His nap did not affect the flight as the aircraft's controls were switched to autopilot. The veteran captain started snoozing some 20 minutes after takeoff when the airplane had leveled off and was on autopilot. He was awakened by the co-pilot but fell asleep again before the landing. He needed his sleep. 1,000 genetically engineered canola seeds were planted in Australia by mistake after being sent to the Department of Primary Industries by a Canadian seed producer. By the time the mistake was discovered, the seeds had sprouted. They were immediately pulled from the ground and destroyed amid concerns they might contaminate surrounding crops. Australia's protocols for importing seed were tightened after the incident, but critics say it demonstrates how easily accidents involving genetically modified seeds can occur. These seeds were sent by Cargill when it alerted the government to the error on August 8th last year. It was almost as an aside. By the way, you also need to destroy 2 plots, canola each. Put them in the trials that I did not notice until last week. Oh, Cargill senior management has now expressed stronger concern. An official wrote that the incident took the wind out of me for a bit. He offered to fly to Australia to do what we need to do. We take this seriously as you do. And the company later apologized for the error and the damage to the environment. No, they didn't apologize for that. One of the Roman Catholic orders at the center of a child abuse scandal in Ireland has apologized unconditionally to those who suffered in its care. In a statement, the Sisters of Mercy said it accepted unreservedly that many children have been hurt and damaged while in our care. The Irish state formally apologized to victims in 1999 and set up a commission to compensate them for their suffering. Oregon State University President Edward Ray apologized for chaos last week at Pet Day when fireworks from the football spring scrimmage spooked nearby dogs and horses. We thought we could hold both events concurrently, but clearly we were wrong, and for that we're sorry. Ray wrote Monday in a letter to the community, I can promise you we will learn from this mistake in the future. Athletic Department and Veterinary College officials also apologized and vowed to prevent another mishap. Miscommunication was partly to blame. Organizers of Pet Day didn't realize how intense nearby fireworks would be. In retrospect, I think we would have tried to hold one of the events on a different day, said Deborah Rarick, executive assistant to the Veterinary College dean. Numerous dogs panicked. About 6 bolted from the intramural fields during the fireworks, which were set off in a field right across the street. Some of the animals went into traffic. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And you know, getting back to subject A, that the photographs that set off this whole thing, we would not be talking about any of this if it were just for pictures. The story of investigating prison abuse was on CNN, or at least on CNN's website, as early as January. But The Herd didn't pick it up because The Herd likes pictures too. Or The Herd thinks that's all we like. And so when confronted with the fact that these pictures had been leaked and were going to be broadcast on CBS 60 Minutes 2, Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Richard Myers did the only honorable thing. He called Dan Rather and asked him to delay the airing of the pictures until operations had calmed down in Fallujah. Now, as of Friday, Defense Secretary Rumsfeld indicated there are more and more horrible, as I've indicated in some of the stuff I've read to you today, more horrible pictures and even videotapes yet to come. Could this be another bad day at Black Rock next on Le Show?
Brother Wallace. I'm playful kitten, tickled to see you. Daniel, I was just on my way to taping some intros. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say that...
Come in, Michael. Yeah. No need saying it to the world.
All right. Gee, I haven't been here for a while. It's like you've let the office go gray, too.
So look here, Hoss, I know what you're going to say, that By letting General Myers jawbone me into delaying the airing of those photographs for a couple of weeks, I severed the last cord of integrity that connected me, fainter than a coon's holler, to the journalistic Rosetta Stone of Ed Murrow. To which I can only say...
too many figures of speech. Daniel, I thought it was a great get.
Well,
if anything, it belonged on 60 and not 62, but that's inside baseball.
Over the dam, Michael. Sure, I'm relieved to hear you say that, because however long it took us to show those pictures, it put us back in the breaking news business again. Not since Alar, don't you think?
Well, Richard Clark made some headlines, didn't he, Daniel?
Oh, I'm not talking book promotion, Brother Wallace. I'm talking good old-fashioned...
Scuff up your shoe leather, I know.
Scrunch down in the vehicle and strip to your safari shirt journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, Michael, our next big get is sitting right here in the machine. I was just calling Fearless Leader to come in and screen it with me.
This isn't what Rumsfeld was talking about, the worst stuff?
Worse than a mad cow rodeo.
Mm.
Looked at it once when it came in.
Now, you wouldn't want to tell me how you're getting this stuff.
Let's just say, Brother Wallace, interesting things happen when you open your own email.
Well, look, Daniel, the promos can wait a few minutes.
Sure. Crew can double-check the lighting.
That's right. Sound can check levels with someone else in the chair.
There you go.
So, what's up? No, I thought you were going to show me the stuff.
Oh, sorry. Anchorman moment. Yes, sir, it's closer at hand than a New York nanosecond.
Okay, now, tell me you love me. I love you.
Mm-mm.
Tell me like you mean it. I love you. Who's the funniest one on Friends?
Ross.
Okay, put the hood back on.
No!
God.
Joey!
Bark like a dog. Bark like you mean it.
Pretty strong stuff, Daniel.
It's worse. Red ants in the sleeping bag worse.
Mm.
In fact, pause it there, will you, Hoss?
Mm.
Rather.
Dan, this is Don Rumsfeld.
Mr. Secretary, I'm pleased you took time away from all the big dogs you're wrestling with to visit with one of us media pups.
Very good self-effacement, Dan. I'll have to remember it for my next personality. Look, we hear you've got the new photos.
Yes, sir.
And the tapes.
Just watching the tape now, sir.
Oh, goodness gracious. The one where they take the little kid on the imaginary visit to Michael Jackson's house?
Haven't gotten to that yet. Sounds bad.
It's horrible.
Rotten tooth bad.
It just defies belief how this can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I'm calling, Dan.
I'm going to go do my promos.
Oh, hang in here half a tick, Doctor. Mm.
You have people in there with you? Oh, my.
Mm-hmm. Mike Wallace and I had on our screening hats, trying to decide whether this goes on 60 minutes too, or 60.
Mm.
Because I know General Myers tried to get you to delay airing this material at all.
Yes, sir. He did his best, but we've been down that road. Now we're back. We're not going back down that road. We're here because...
No, I follow you. See, so that's why I was calling. I thought at worst, 48 hours. But for the good of the country, Dan, not 60 minutes.
Don't know, sir. Cuts both ways.
Well,
62 should get this stuff because it's a follow-up on our story. It's a reward for good old-fashioned scuff-up-your-shoe-leather, get-your-hands-dirty-and-get-out-alive journalism. 60 should get it because this is a bigger story.
You know something, Dan?
Hmm?
Compared to trying to figure out how to pierce that wall of criminal procedure to spring something potentially unhelpful like this up to a higher level in a more timely manner... You've got a hard decision, too.
Mm-hmm.
Should I have the president call you?
I don't know, sir. Maybe you should have him call Brother Wallace. Mike Wallace.
Hey, thanks.
Yes, sir.
All right, Dan. Boy, I sure miss the days when I could just call your boss.
Yes, sir. Good times. You take care, Mr. Secretary.
Could it at least be on after Andy Rooney?
Oh, that is a Wallace question, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Rumsfeld was calling?
Mm-hmm.
Daniel, I'd never thought I'd live long enough to see this again. This is like the Pentagon Papers, and we're the New York Times.
Yes, sir. Move over, Mr. Catbird. Somebody else needs your seat.
So Rumsfeld's going to call me?
No, sir. The president.
You've got to be kidding. Hmm? They sure are scared.
No. In a way, I think it humanizes them.
I suppose.
Felt a little guilty stringing Brother Rumsfeld along like that.
How do you mean?
Mike,
hmm?
Take a look.
How's that bra fitting you, Ahab? Now put it in your mouth and moo like a cow.
Hmm. Are you kidding? After Janet Jackson, we can't air this.
Suppose you're right. Well, I do have promos to do before I sleep. Good get anyway, Brother Rather.
Thank you, Brother Wallace.
Just to follow up on our search for the world's most expensive banana, Harry, not me, another Harry, writes $1 per very small banana. We've had higher prices, but those probably have been for full-size bananas, so now we're splitting bananas here. $1 per very small banana last weekend at the American Physical Society Conference in Denver. I bought one anyway, he says. That's an old Henny Youngman joke. Go yo-yo for wealthy idiots. I got one. So that was at the American Physical Society. They were really asking how many angels could dance on the head of a banana. And from Jay, who really doesn't want me to use his last name, I would think, I went to a San Francisco sex club last weekend, and in the course of a $250 humiliation, had a banana inserted into my holy region. So that would be a $250 banana, ladies and gentlemen. I think Jay wins, and yet he loses in so many ways. Get him to Iraq. He can empathize. Oh. I am corrected by a listener when I opined a couple of weeks ago that the limited sovereignty the U.S. is turning over to Iraq as of June 30th probably would be a new phenomenon. Of course it's not. This listener reminds me. That's what American Indian nations have had ever since they signed treaties with the United States. True. Mm-hmm. Limited sovereignty. That's why they have gambling casinos, but they can't start wars. Freedom comes to Iraq. Banned under Saddam Hussein, satellite television was introduced to Iraqis last year as yet another freedom that comes courtesy of their liberators. The coalition has tried to offer counterpoints to Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya, the two Arab-owned satellite news channels that broadcast a lot of pictures of bad stuff, by starting the U.S.-funded Arabic newspaper Al Sabah and its own local TV station, Al Iraqiya. Al Sabah's editor and most of his staff quit this past Monday, saying goodbye with a blistering front-page editorial celebrating, quote, the end of a nightmare, unquote, under American control. The TV channel, run with a $96 million grant from you and me, airs just 40 minutes of news a day and is mocked for its devotion to home improvement and sports programs. Well, it reflects the real America. What do you want? We don't want to know. We want to know how to fix our homes and who won the game. Without a credible Iraqi alternative, this is according to Knight Ritter's correspondent in Baghdad, the two pan-Arab stations, Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya, are the best way for Iraqis to see the pipeline sabotage in the north, the bloody gun battles of the west, the car bombings in the central region, the militia standoffs in the south. Let's not forget, said one observer, everybody here has a weapon in his house, suggesting they may feel a need to defend their honor by attacking Americans. Our response, the coalition has stepped up the monitoring of Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya, with teams of translators watching broadcasts and delivering summaries to occupation authorities. In the past month, some of the most powerful U.S. officials have blasted the station's coverage. That's right. Lean on the media. And proving the bloggers right, California Secretary of State Kevin Shelley ended 5 months of speculation, announced this past Friday he was decertifying all electronic touchscreen voting machines in the state due to security concerns and lack of voter confidence. He's also passing along evidence to the state's attorney general to bring criminal and civil charges against voting machine maker Diebold for fraud. Diebold's chairman, DeForest Buster Sorries, Diebold Chief Executive Walden O'Dell had pledged in a Republican fundraising letter just last year he was committed to delivering Ohio's electoral votes to President Bush. Ohio has also bought a lot of Diebold machines. Now the director of marketing for Diebold says that O'Dell regrets making the statement and no longer participates in fundraising. Okay. Now back to the hearing where Secretary Rumsfeld was participating on Friday. And even on Friday, things didn't go quite as planned. Here's John McCain questioning the secretary.
Now, Mr. Secretary, I'd like to know, I'd like you to give the committee the chain of command from the guards to you, all the way up the chain of command.
I think General Myers brought an indication of it, and we'll show it.
Thank you.
First, with respect to the...
We did not bring it.
Oh, my.
Yeah, oh, my. It
was all prepared.
It was all prepared. What possibly could have happened? Oh, my is right. And finally, from that hearing, in case you're one of the Democrats having second thoughts about John Kerry, here's Joe Lieberman.
I cannot help but say, however, that those who were responsible for killing 3,000 Americans on September 11, 2001, never apologized. Those who have killed hundreds of Americans in uniform in Iraq, working to liberate Iraq and protect our security, have never apologized. And those who murdered and burned and humiliated four Americans in Fallujah a while ago never received an apology from anybody.
Well, they shouldn't have had to receive an apology, should they, Senator? And Adam, who said to Eve, he said it to God, "I got more ribs." He never received an apology from anybody in Fallujah. Ladies and gentlemen, I wish I could more, but because I got trades to read for you, I got tales of airport security, that's just going to have to wait till next week, because that's going to put the cap on this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at this same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the American Forces Network. You guys and gals still there? Up and down the east coast of North America on the shortwave giant, WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it via your computer, harryshear.com and kcrw.com, and now available via free download at audible.com/LeShow. And it'd be just like it just being a few bad apples if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty. Thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. LeShow Internet Services by Steve Mack. LeShow playlists usually available at the newly refurbished harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.